Servant leadership. Servant leadership is a philosophy in which an individual interacts with others, either in a management or fellow employee capacity, with the aim of achieving authority rather than power. The system embodies a decentralized organizational structure. The authority figure intends to promote the well-being of those around him or her. Servant leadership involves the individual demonstrating the characteristics of empathy, listening, stewardship, and commitment to personal growth towards others. I don't know about you, but I didn't learn about this concept until I was an adult. And I think it's one of the concepts within leadership that gets to be discussed for men and for anyone that's looking to make a change in the collective, in the community, on a scale outside of themselves. It involves being shifting the perspective to helping and supporting the growth of others. And in this podcast, I have someone that is the epitome of that in my eyes, Ty Holmes. And I grew up with this guy, and I'm excited for you all to hear what he has to say, because he talks about servant leadership, and he's got some gems on leadership as a whole. So I'm excited for you all to hear this. Enjoy, take notes, listen again, share, comment, and I see you guys listening. I see the numbers. I appreciate you, and I'm excited for you to hear this content. Enjoy. Oh boy, I'm just want to take a moment and just excited for this, man. So I'm lighting some sage. You familiar with sage, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. I'm just lighting some sage here because
good energy.
Yeah, man. You know already.
Absolutely. I tell you, that was something when we were over in Iraq. That was one of the things that some of the Iraqis, the soldiers we became friends with, they really they were able to get us some of that, some sage, and we use it regularly to, warn off the spirits, heal spirits, cleanse the soul, the mind, the body. It telling you, you'd come back from a mission and to go into your room and to be able to do that, it put a certain calmness in your heart. And I tell people are like, well, what did you do to get through things? I said, you pray, you reflect, but you do other things. Right. I said, there's tons of little things that equal up to something massive that can help you.
And sage was a helper.
It definitely was a helper. Pass it on to our younger soldiers who initially rejected it. Same with the 18 and 19 year old kids. Initially rejected it, but by the time we left, they all embraced it, and it just was a wonderful, beautiful thing.
Yes, what's up, man? Yeah, sage, and this is all stuff we've had for thousands of years, man. It's like, and more pits. It's so good to hear that it's being used in that way, man, to help cleanse you guys, man. That's what's up.
Yeah, cool, absolutely,
man. So, all right, man, this is exciting. So, listen. So, I'm gonna get this kicked off. So, welcome back to this episode of Men Talk About. I'm your host, Paul Newell, and thank you for joining this podcast. If this is the first time that you're hearing this podcast, this is a podcast for men and the development of masculine energy. So, in this podcast, I interview other men. To help men that are listening and those that are tapping into their masculine energy, to help them with development, help with education, help with the inner work that's going to help to release the blocks within that can help us to show up as a more conscious male in this environment, in this world. So I thank you all for listening. I see the numbers. I see you all tuning in, and I am appreciative and grateful. And I'm really excited about having my guest here today because Ty Holmes, this is, there's this saying called my day one guy, my day one. All right. This guy, I've known him all my life, growing up on the same street on Park Ave in Summit, New Jersey. riding my bike back and forth to my mom's and dad's. I see Ty on a regular, man, and our families knew each other. There's mutual admiration, love, and respect for both families because, you know, my brothers were older than Ty, and Ty was older than me, so I consider him my big brother. My big brothers are like his big brothers, so it was fantastic. And his family in our town, man, was one of the black families that everyone held in high regard. And his dad was the chief of police for Summit Police. Was he the chief? What was his rank, Ty, when he was on the force? Hey, Ty?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
I'm sorry, I thought I was on. Yes, detective.
Yeah. Oh, he's a detective. He was a detective for the Summit Police Department.
He was a trailblazer, I'll tell you that.
Man, definitely was, man. Definitely was. And his line and his energy came through with Ty. And I'm excited to have him on this episode for us to talk about the concepts of servant leadership. Servant leadership. Servant leadership has been something that's been on my mind for years, because going into leadership programs and the leadership path with the Mankind Project, I found that leadership is a practice, and it's a mindset, and there's different types of leadership. And when I first heard the term servant leadership, I thought it was more appropriate to who I am as far as wanting to help people. And I thought that it would be appropriate, especially in this time when things are uncertain. And I think that there's a really open space for more men or really more people to step up into leadership. I wanted to open up the concept of what servant leadership is and how it can be applicable in these times. So I'll give you a rundown. Ty has been in the service and the armed forces and a police officer over 25 years, for 25 years. And he lives out in PA. The dude is, he's top notch, man. Like I'm sitting here and thinking about this, thinking about him, I'm thinking of his smile and his energy, you know, and like, I remember, one of the things I always remember about your smile, like your eyes would close up a little bit and you have like this brightness to your face, man. It was the best thing ever. It's like, it put me in a good mood.
Appreciate that.
Most deaf, man. So, I'm excited to have you on. Listen, before we dive into this, though, Ty, is there anything else that you want to add in as far as your intro, man?
Honestly, truly, the intro you gave me is more than I deserve, but I'm looking forward to this conversation because being that I, first and foremost, I was raised by a serving leader and my father, and then serving in the military for 25 years and also 5 years with LAPD, I got to experience all the different types of leadership. So this is a very interesting conversation. You know, I'm looking forward to having to the end where I was in this position where I had to shape and mold and nurture, you know, and teach some of the young men that were under me the different types of leadership. So I wish I would have had this conversation specifically with some of those young men back then. I had something similar to that, but what you and how you're talking about it, I'm loving it. It's deep, and I'm looking forward to getting into it with you.
Oh, blessings, man. Blessings, Ty. And, you know, let's get into it. So, you know, I think the first question that I want to dissect or I want to check in with you on is, when you hear servant, what comes to mind? What would be the three words that you would think of that come to mind?
When I think of servant, I think of helping, I think of influencing, working together, teamwork. There's so many different words that come with that. I'm trying to narrow it down to three.
It's all good. So influence, you said, teamwork.
Yes, willingness, because you have to be willing to help. Willingness. What are you willing to do? What are you willing to commit to do? And how far are you willing to commit? Because everyone knows there's different levels of commitment. You know?
You hit, man, right out of the gate. God dang, man, I love this already. Listen, you hit on a piece right there that resonated with me deeply, because as I'm asking you this question, I'm like, well, hell, how would I answer that? And when you said willingness, that's a great word when you think of servant. Because, like, there, you know, there can be, I think it's, and I really, now as I'm thinking of it, it's really the servant. It's coming back to the base to serve, to be of service. And I remember when you said willingness. Have you seen the movie Way of the Peaceful Warrior
by Dan Millman? Not. No, oh, I have not seen it. I'm going to put that on my things to do.
Oh, listen, Ty, you love this movie. It was with Nick Nolte, but the book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, is a great book too by Dan Millman. Fellas, okay, check it out. So there's a line that he says in it. He's like, there is no higher honor than to be of service.
Amen.
There is no higher honor than to be of service. So you saying what you had here, like influence, teamwork, willingness, I appreciate what you said with that. And also you said commitment. So something that I had, like, humble, I had the servitude piece. I had the servitude, but I had to serve in there. I like the willingness piece that you said too. I had willing. I was thinking willing. That's why I think that's why it resonated with me. And the other piece is giving. Because I just see it as like being of service is giving of oneself, right? It's like really giving, being able to put yourself in another's shoes and put yourself in another situation to support and be a service and offer to help.
I always say this, and I said this when I stood in front of my troops. There is no greater honor than to be a part of something bigger than yourself, and especially your willingness to sacrifice your life for people you've never met. And if you're looking at that, and I said, always reflect before you go out that gate or go out the wire or stand in front of someone, know that there is no greater honor. And if today is your time to go, know that it's doing God's will, what you should be, what we are meant to do in this role that we have volunteered for.
Damn, man. That just gave me chills, man. Because
go ahead. You were saying?
Well, I was going to say, like, that's the way you said that to your troops, you know, being aligned to something bigger.
Absolutely.
I think that's a big piece of it. So we got the servant piece, right? The serve piece. So when you hear the word leadership, what are the three words that you would that come to mind to you for that?
Oh wow! See, leadership breaks down in so many different words for me. But what guidance, direction? Depending on what type of leader you are, dictatorship. I've seen some that were just dictators, and at times you have to be a dictator, even no matter what type of leadership style. There are moments, and there are going to be times when you have to, simple as this, dictate. That's part of being a leader. I tell you what to do. There is no debate. There's no questioning. You need to follow for whatever reasons, you know, for safety reasons, supervise, organization. You organize things as a leader. There's just so many different things that goes into the word leadership. You know, like I said, putting it down to three is really hard.
Yeah. See, I had, just went out one more time, but I have, on this one, I like what you said with organizer, right? I like the organizer one. Okay. I have champion. And also I like what you said with mentor, right? Mentorship.
And that
goes along with like what you were saying with guidance. What took me back for a second is when you were saying dictatorship, right? And I'm wondering if this is one of the things that may have me specifically, I can't speak for anyone else. The one of the things that has me specifically shy away from leadership sometimes, Ty, is activating that dictator type of vibe. And when I dive into it, like when you just said, and I dive real quick into it, I was like, wait, is it me being a dictator or is it me being assertive because I see what we have to do and I got to get it done?
Well, I think it's more in order to be into a successful dictator, your reputation for me was established over the time. In other words, it made it easier for me to be a dictator because my reputation was established from year to year, working with them, building the rapport. I would never ask people that were working under me to do something that I was not willing to do myself. So
understood.
In order to be a good dictator, I first and foremost believe you have to have also learned to be a good follower. Because you can't just walk in the door and demand respect. You have to earn it. Whether you are senior to them, you're in charge, that does not matter. You earn it to them by your work ethic, you know, by your professionalism. It all starts with presentation. In other words, you don't live as I don't do as I say, do as I do.
Right.
And that is part of that's an extremely huge part of leadership, is people looking at you for to set the example. So yes, dictatorship can be hard at times. Now there have been times over the course of my life where I've had to give orders. Sometimes it did not have good consequences in combat. And I knew that giving that order, but it was required for us to accomplish our mission. But that's also something that we always call it the burden of leadership. When you accept a leadership position, you also accept some of the negative burdens that come with it, i.e. making these calls. But again, in order to, when you're looking at it, you're already setting a positive example. You're already setting a great, you're a role model for so many people to look at and go, wow, and drawing inspiration from you. So a lot of people, because the wrong people were using dictatorship in the past, they have put such a negative overturn on it. That's why we have to take it back and show people that it's not a bad word. All it means is at times we're not always going to be in a position where I'm going to be able to come to you and we're going to talk this out. There's going to become a time when something's going to happen where I'm going to need
Ty, you cut out on that one, man.
Okay, sorry. I don't know why it keeps doing that. But I was saying, I don't know if you got that part. There's going to come a time, like I said, when you're working with people, you tell them, look, I'm not always going to have the opportunity to come to you and have a discussion. There's going to come a time where I'm going to have to come to you and say, this is how it's going to be. Now, the rapport that you have built up with those people, that is what allows them to accept that dictatorship as something, not a negative thing. You know, if you come in day one and start dictating, then people are going to look at you and go, well, who is this? But if you come in and you've already established, again, day one, from your work ethic, from your appearance, you know, it goes so much more than just one thing.
Yeah, I used to tell people, wild. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
So, like, for instance, outside in any place I've ever lived, there's a mirror right by my front door, and everyone says, why? I said, because the last thing before I step out that door, I check myself. Not because I care about my face, but because I want to make sure the moment I step out that door in that uniform, I know that I'm representing not just myself, not just my family, but my country. And I am going to be, if nothing else, as perfect as I possibly can be. Now, when I walk into work and my soldiers see that, they want to, wow, your uniform is always squared away. Yes. And I expect yours to be. And so, again, a lot of things go into that. You can be a dictator and it not be a bad thing. The reason why I think it's considered such a negative thing is because the wrong people for so long have used it.
See, oh man, you just had me realize something really powerful there. It's like leadership. It's real. What this is coming down to is leadership is got the spectrums, right? There's a ton of different types of leadership. And the thing why I see more people can see dictatorship as a bad thing because they have yet to understand what the other parts of leadership, like servant leadership, entail. Because really what I'm hearing you say, Ty, is that before it gets to that point where you have to step into the dictatorship, you're the servant leader where you're being of service to the men to give them an example. Listen, this is how things gonna roll so we can have success and we can survive. So because there's something bigger. There's something bigger there.
You hit the nail on the head. You're absolutely right. 100%.
It's interesting. And
when you do that, like I said, it makes it so much easier. Now, I'm not going to say at all times that you're going to be successful in that way.
Right.
There's always going to be that one person or people that are going to resist no matter what you do. You just can't please some people. Those people, you have to take a different approach and get. But as a whole, and I would tell people, I said, I would tell the people, and I learned from, I had some, before I joined the military, again, great role, your brothers, I used to watch them, and I tell you, again, I took a part of how they carried themselves. I said, man, I'm looking at these powerful black men, and I used to watch your brother run at the track. I used to say, God, I want to be like him. But he carried himself with such strong reverence. Like, you're going to respect me because I've earned that as a black man. I'm walking with my head held high. He earned it. And again, when I did talk to him during track, when he gave me pointers, I took in everything he said and drank it up like Kool-Aid, because here I'm looking at a person, I said, he's earned it, you know, and here by default, he's become that servant leader. He didn't ask him anything, but he just carried himself in such a way that I wanted to follow him, but he was also sharing with me knowledge. And tell people that's, you know, what we have to do, especially now more than ever, because a lot of young black men, and I see this where I'm at, and I try to work with them, they're lacking that at home. They're not getting a positive reinforcement. They're getting the negativity. So they don't even comprehend any type of leadership. All they're used to is being yelled at, and I tell them that's not leadership. That's not any type of leadership.
Right.
And if we're failing them at such a young age, that how do we think they're going to translate and grow from that if we're not instituting this understanding of different types of leadership at a young age?
This is the thing that I'm fascinated with. That's why I like having these conversations, Ty. And I'm in such appreciation of men, black men like you being stepping into what this is an example to me of servant leadership. And I want to read one of these things before I continue with this thought. Like when I was looking this up, doing my homework on this, a servant leader focuses primarily on the growth and well-being of people and communities to which they belong, while traditional leadership generally involves the accumulation and exercise of power by one at the top of the pyramid. Servant leadership is different. The servant leadership shares power, puts the needs of others first, and helps people develop and transform as highly as possible. So, like, even what you were saying with my brothers, the same thing you were offering to these young men. It's like, you know, the way you carry yourself is a way. And I appreciate what you're saying that as a black man, because I think and something you and I spoke about before we were doing our pregame before the call is, you know, I've had fears about stepping up into leadership because, shit, man, the leaders that I've seen step up for the people get clipped, you know,
yes.
And there's fear for me in that. Right. And like listening to you and what you're saying, servant leadership, while it can be that stepping up on a grander scale, servant leadership is also being an authentic self and sharing the wisdom with others.
You're exactly right. If you were to go back and could talk to Martin Luther King and ask him, I guarantee you, even though his life ended way earlier than it should, and ask would he change, he would tell you no.
Right.
My life, the impact that I had on people of color will be felt for thousands of years. There's also something with the servant leadership. We are stronger together than we are by ourselves. So if I am being a good servant leader, then collectively we will be better because the group is stronger than one. There is no I in team. We as a team are going to be more successful than I could. Michael Jordan, I was watching the document before the other day, the Last Dance, and he said something that hit home. He said, Michael Jordan didn't win those titles. He said, Michael Jordan never won a title without Scottie Pippen. So
right.
when they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen. And I thought that was out of this whole thing, everything that he has said in this Last Dance documentary is probably the most powerful, because here is a gentleman that arguably is considered to be the greatest of his sport. And, you know, and he, out of his own mouth, said, no, if they're going to speak Michael Jordan, they better speak Scottie Pippen. And there's a man right there that understands exactly what you are and the message you are trying to deliver. And that's coming from the alpha male of basketball, the pinnacle of basketball and business professionals. He has translated his success off the, on the court to off the court. But he made it clear. I want everyone to understand something right now. Don't ever say my name without saying Scottie's next. That right there is a true definition of what a servant leader is supposed to be. You bring it up. In the military, we have a saying, and this is something I preached. I learned the job of the person above me, but I also taught the person below me my job. We are the only country out of all the other countries that I ever served with, and I've served with, you name a country, I've either trained with them or we've served with them in combat. Mm-hmm. We're the only country that does that. But in order to make ourselves stronger as leaders, we learn the person above you and you teach the person below you. Therefore, you cut off the – technically the theory is if you cut off the head of the snake, it dies. Not with us. Next man up. And I use that in my personal life, and I use that – and I tell my sons the same thing. You teach the man above you – I mean below you.
Yeah. And you teach, and Ty, you cut out again, man. You teach the man above you learn the position of the man above you, and you teach your position to the man below you.
Now, some people aren't going to want to do that. You sometimes have to take it. Sometimes you just have to be assertive. But if he's any kind of leader, sadly there are more poor leaders I'm finding than good leaders. Sadly. But if he doesn't want to teach you, then you take it. You can take it. There's ways of doing it. Observation is a tool.
So I want to dig into that. And before I do that though, like what you just said with being able to learn above, teach below. You saying that goes against a lot of what I think men are conditioned to believe.
You're right.
I think it's their conditioning. Like, you know, listen, you got to be the alpha male. You got to be the dog. You got to be the champion. Listen, I get that piece. It's like, there's got to be a leader at some point. And it's one of the things, especially doing a lot of men's facilitation work. One of the things I see that men overcome and really begin to grasp is the concept of support. And being able to work with another, collaborate with another, build with another, and learn what that's like. Because, you know, most people, you even said it, like most people will say, well, you want to learn my job? I'm not going to teach you my shit. You crazy? Get out of here.
Right, because they're more afraid of losing instead of understanding and having confidence in themselves. That's what that comes down to. That comes of lack of confidence within themselves and their abilities.
Yes,
that,
man.
That takes on a whole new – that's a whole other conversation. But when someone's like that – and trust me, there's jealousy and envy I've learned in the military, even in law enforcement. When they start to behave like that, that's insecurity comes from themselves. Their lack of – they don't know if they can actually – wow, wait, if he learns my job, I'm replaceable. Then you come in with the mentality, first and foremost, make yourself so important, you know – that you're not replaceable. I was never the smartest guy, and I'd walk into any military school I ever attended, and you know they would always say, "Okay, go around the class, introduce yourself. What are your goals here?" My goal is to be number one in this class when we graduate. Right. And always the instructor would go, "Well, that's pretty arrogant." I said, "No, I am not the smartest, but I can guarantee you, no one in this class would outwork me." And I use that when I reported to any unit, "You will not outwork me." And you were saying, like. Again, you just have to back it up first and foremost.
Right.
But a lot of people don't get that. And, you know, when people don't want to teach you their job, fine. You don't sometimes have to. You can just observe the way they do their job and take mental notes and say, I like the way he handled that, mental note, or I don't like the way he handled that, or volunteer. Hey, can I help you? There's ways to manipulate people if they don't want to help you. can I help you? Can I take some of that off you because you look a little swamp? I have some free time. Yes, people are more than willing to give up work.
Right.
If they know, so long as they are, don't think that, well, he's doing it just to get, no, I'm not trying to get ahead of you. I'm trying to help you because as strong as you are, we are. You're our leader.
Right.
If you have a bad leader, no matter what your job is, you're going to underperform.
Yeah, you know, as we're talking about this, I'm recognizing something that's necessary for servant leadership, and it's courage.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, like originally, Ty, I was like, man, you know, listen, servant leadership is about, you know, the bigger, greater good. And I'm thinking now, like, shoot, man, the way conditioning is, the bigger, greater good usually isn't taught. It's like, you know, and there's a component about being self-centered, or some of people think it's selfish. Mm-hmm. But really, it's like to go against the grain and really look at things from a higher perspective, look at from a bigger picture, takes a good amount of courage and vision. Because, you know, it's like I'm thinking about this. I'm like, hold up, because most of the time people are going to go against the grain of going, or not against the grain, but people are going to go against really thinking of the bigger picture and thinking like, listen, this person may be better at this job, so let me give them a little heads up on what this job entails. You know what? Maybe I'll, you know, it's like that concept. So I think it's very interesting that it has that component to it. So, you know, when I was talking about, I was mentioning the fear, you know, you really broke down the piece about stepping through the fear. And I think, I'd like to hear your thoughts, on being able to step into that leadership that's about the people or something greater. What would you say are some of the keys or some of the lessons you've learned about stepping into that space?
And when you step into a leadership role, the first thing you have to do is you put yourself last. You have to. You now have to understand that you are responsible for leading, shaping, mentoring, taking care of the well-being, being, you know, everything. You now become last in this equation. Mm-hmm. You have to check your ego. You have to understand that if you're the leader, again, the team is only as strong as you will let it be. Right. In other words, if you put a limit on it, then you're going to limit the team's ability to be successful or how successful they will be. So it comes down to checking the ego, willingness to share, having the courage and integrity. And that's another word I wanted to throw in, integrity, to do what's right when no one's, to do what's right when no one's watching. Because sometimes people get into positions of leadership and go, well, now I'm the boss, I can do whatever I want. No. It's being a leader is having the, you know, just the fortitude, the integrity to do what's right when no one's watching. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people just abuse that, but also the courage to speak out. There are plenty of commanders that I serve with, and my wife will be she'd be the first one to tell you. I did not, by any means, I don't mince words. I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And I would always tell commanders that I work for. My job for the latter part of my years in the military was a senior enlisted person. So my job was to be the voice of the men to the commanders. I didn't tell commanders what they wanted. Now, I would always say, what is your mission? How do you want to shape the unit? What are your visions? Okay, great. And then I would go out and make that happen. But there were times when I'd have to pull that commander aside and have a look, you're not doing something right, or this. And it did make me popular with them. But at the same time, as I would tell people, that's not your job. You're not here for a popularity contest.
Right.
You're here to lead, inspire, help. And if you had not grasped that, if you're not willing to.
Oh, Ty, hold on. You broke. You cut out again. You
said, okay, I'm sorry. Anyway,
no worries. If you're not willing to.
If you're not willing to risk it all, then why step into that position? I would tell people, and I say this all the time, that as a leader, it tells so much. But if you're so worried about losing your job that you're not doing your job, then you need to leave that job. Again, did I make enemies over 25 years because of the way I led? I'm sure I did. But it was the way that I was taught from growing up, from watching Feynman, your family, my family, and some of the other examples we had. In college, I learned a lot, but also I served under some phenomenal black men who took me under the wing very early in my career and said, you have the potential to be something. We're going to show you if you'll listen. And I was like a sponge, like, please feed it to me. Because these were people that had 25, 30 years. And I'm like, wow, the history that come from these men is just unbelievable. So it was something that was like, wow, I was loving it. So I was absorbing it. I was like, every time they would talk, soak it in. And it was never a moment of jealousy from them. They didn't, well, no, I don't want to teach you. No. And they, when they realized that I wanted to learn, they were like, wait, you really want to learn this? And I said, yes. Now, I did not expect the military to be my career forever. Yeah. In fact, I did get out. But I wanted to learn because it was going to help me also be a better man, better father, better friend. Those are the things I said. It's going to help me grow as a person. So that's another thing people need to do. When leadership, no matter what kind of leadership role you are, there are many different kinds, can benefit you not just in your professional life, but in your personal life. But you have to be willing to, number one, step in, and check your ego. Right. And two, also understand that the people under you that you're in charge of, they have something to bring to the table. Listen to them. You can learn. Just because you're a leader, you can't shut out others and say, no, I'm in charge.
Yeah, there's always something to learn.
I had nothing to learn from you. Exactly. There's, if you close your mind like that, then you are setting yourself up for failure.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the fear part about stepping up, because especially what happened in light of the video just the surface, I tell people, I said, you know, fear is how they controlled us for so long.
Right.
Okay. Don't ever give that power back. All right. They win when that power is, when they have that power, and they stripped us of that power so long ago. We're taking it back. And people need to understand that when you allow that fear to creep back in, you're allowing them to win. Mm-hmm. And like yourself, I was saying about yourself, is you have to continue to inspire and speak out. Because like, for instance, when my father passed away, one of the last conversations we had, you know, we talked deep for like the last 2 days that he was really able to talk. And, you know, and he just said, hey, and I said, what, you know, talk to me. Do you have any regrets? And he said, none. He said, I lived my life the way I wanted to. I have, my children are beautiful and healthy. And he said, you know, I did something right. And I said, you did absolutely right. You set the example. Yeah. And I carry a lot. And I reference it all the time, talking to people, saying, my dad was one of two cops in Summit that were of color, him and Lonnie Davis. Yep. And I know what they went through. And growing up, my sister used to say, Dad has a hard enough time because people want him to fail because of the color of his skin. Mm-hmm. Don't ever give him a reason to say he can't control his kids. So I my father never said that. My father used to always say, just be yourself, you're a kid. Right. No, I don't
care. Oh, you broke up, Ty.
I don't know why he keeps doing that. But he said, you know, my father never said, hey, I need you to be a certain way because people are watching me. He never said that. He said, be you.
Right.
You're going to be a kid. Be yourself. I'll take care of how people view me. But my sister, my older sister, always used to say, don't ever let you be the reason why Dad's name is spoken negatively, because trust me, there are people that want to see him fail. You know, being one of two black cops, him and Lonnie Davis, you know, and my dad told me years later, the reason why him and Lonnie Davis were both hired. Now, were they qualified? Absolutely. Him and Lonnie Davis, the phenomenal officers, right. Their reputation, their education, both of them were very educated, well-educated. Actually, Lonnie had, I think Lonnie had a master's degree, and my dad went back and got his degree. Well, he had a criminal justice bachelor's degree, but then he went back and got a master's degree for psychology so he could, you know, mentor and help police officers. But
I remember, you know, he mentored a lot of people, man. I remember your dad, man. He was always in the paper, like, mentoring kids and, like, other officers. That's what's up, man.
But that's where I learned it from. That's where it was. Here's this alpha male. And not alpha male in the sense that people think you're an alpha male, you have to be the last person in the room. No.
Thank you for that.
he didn't have to be the loudest person in the room. And he used to always teach me that. The loudest person in the room is the most insecure person in the room. Is what a true leader is, someone that's willing to step out in front and say, I'll take on this responsibility. I'll take on the challenge. I'm willing to help. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get this done. Let's work together. Bring people together. That's what a true leader is. And my father embodied all that and passed it on. So, like I said, I've watched you from do not change a thing. Do not let fear creep in. Do not let what they want to happen happen. Because at the end of the day, the only way they can right now, they're running. They're running scared and they're losing ground. And they're like, well, what can we do now? So they're grasping at straws. So long as we don't give in, they're going to fail.
Thank you for that, man. Thank you for that. And I want to ask, especially what you said, man, and that supports me tremendously, man. That helps me out tremendously. I'm curious with what's going on right now, and for the viewers that are for the listeners, like when we're recording this, there's a recording or there's a tape that surfaced about a black man in Georgia, a 25-year-old black man in Georgia that was shot by two white men while he was jogging. And the fear, there's fear, like that's why I came to Ty talking about that fear, stepping up. And Ty, I'm curious, like especially with your experience and wisdom about serving, about leadership. I'm gonna say leadership in general. For me, I mean, like people are gonna take from this what they want to take from this, but for me, man, I really want to step up and do something for those that are like me that want to step up and do something about this injustice or any social justice issue. What counsel or guidance would you give those men that want to step up and make significant change?
Well, the most important thing is stepping up is continue to speak out. Use your platforms, but also mentor the youngers. Bring some of the younger men who are discouraged, who are not, don't have that role model at home. Help them understand that the way to fight this and to get back and to stop this is by doing it in a positive manner. As much as you want to go out and act out negatively, burn something down or break something down, or just, let's target people of not of color because one did this. We can't do the eye for an eye. That's not good for anybody.
Right.
What you have to do is speak out. We have to start getting people in positions of elected officials. We have to start voting. Okay, that's the way that you change things when you start to vote. I think the most miserable time for a whole bunch of people was when Obama got voted in. But it was also encouraging for a lot of people because they said, wait, he can do it. I can do it.
Right.
So what I said and I take from this is I tell everyone is, if you want to take something from that video, number one, that young man went out fighting for his life. He refused to get on his knees and accept what they were going to deliver, whatever type of justice those cowards were trying to deliver to him. He fought back. And to honor him, what we can do is, number one, speak out. Number two, vote, because we have the lowest voter turnout since Barack Obama's left office, and that saddens me. We've learned nothing. Mm-hmm. So many people have come before us, fought to get us the right to vote, and we don't use it often enough. Okay, so I tell people you have to vote, you have to speak out, and you can never let fear control you. If fear controls you, then you might as well go find a hole and crawl in.
Yeah, wow.
That goes back to being a leader. You can't be scared. Leaders, you can be scared as a leader. Let me phrase that. Plenty of times as a leader in leadership roles, I was scared, but you don't ever convey that to the people you're leading. As far as they're concerned, as a leader, when crisis hits, you have all the answers. If you don't, you're finding them out. But you, while a tornado may be going off in your head, you are as calm on the outside as possible because you are setting the tone for them. What we need to do is set the tone for some of the younger men who saw that video and they're angry and want to be, I got to react. I got to do this. I got to go break some windows. No, you have to take that energy, funnel it into something positive. You know, volunteer at a shelter, volunteer here, you know, find a young man who's struggling, bring him up. Sadly, the danger is there. In my own town, in my own neighborhood, I have experienced it. Jogging in my own neighborhood, I've had the police called on me. In a neighborhood that I've lived and owned a house for almost years, I am the Democratic elected official for this neighbor, for this area, and they elected me. And yet the police were called on me, and I didn't have an ID because I don't carry one when I go jogging. And it turned into something ugly. It really did, to the point where the officer drew his weapon because he considered me a threat based off of my training when I do our conversation. And, you know, what I learned from that, number one, by remaining calm and de-escalating the situation, to save my life, number one, because what was going to be gained by getting shot right then and there?
Nothing. Right.
Mm. I tell people all the time, I talk to some of the young men around here, I say, getting yourself shot and killed is not going to help you at all. Okay. Yeah. You have to use your head. You have to be smart, and you don't give them an opportunity. Now, I'm not saying bow and dip and tuck your head and yes, sir, no, sir. No, but don't give people a reason. You know, right. Some of the things I tell some of the young men now, if you get pulled over and you find it to be injustice, just sit back. Record if possible. If you can't hold your phone up, I always tell people, you know what to do? And I used to tell people this when I would pull them over if they were uncomfortable. Call your phone, and they'd say, why? And I said, let it go to voicemail. The voicemail will record this entire stop. There you go. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what? I said, for your safety, if you're uncomfortable, call your phone and let your voicemail, put it on speaker, and let your voicemail go. I tell young men now, when you get stopped and you believe that someone's acting unjust, you're not going to win an argument on the side of the road.
Right.
It's never going to be that way. So what you're going to do is you're going to just be smarter than them. They're waiting for you to act out. They're waiting for you to be negative. They're waiting for you to do something so they can say, look, see, they don't know how to act.
Right.
But when you act the opposite way, when you show them that you're
Oh, wait, Ty, you cut out again.
Okay, sorry. When you show them you're capable of rising above their behavior,
right?
They don't know what themselves. They're like, wait, I'm confused.
Yeah, they're not used to it. They're like, wait, I know one tactic.
Yeah,
I know exactly. The tactic to this.
I know how to. So it's psychological warfare. And it's just, and again, that's where education comes in. I tell people, not all education comes from, but it's going to come from college. There are many different forms of education. You know, one of the smartest men I ever met in my life is a gentleman I served in the military with. He didn't even graduate high school. When I first joined, he had been in for almost 30 years, never graduated high school, but he educated himself to the point where he had read, I think he said, 25,000 books. I said, how did you read that many books? He was reading literally two books a day. I said, you're kidding me. He says, no, because that's, you know, I saw him walking around when I first got into the unit, and I had to strike a conversation up with him because I always saw him with a book, and every time he had his head buried in it. I said, you're always reading. He said, no. He said, I'm eating. I said, eating? He said, yes, knowledge. I'm eating knowledge.
Oh, wow.
He said, that's what I'm doing. I'm not reading. He said, I'm taking in knowledge. I'm feeding my brain. I'm educating myself.
He said, that's all. Wow, that's, I love that reframe.
So,
wow.
He taught me something right there because he said, did you go to college? I said, yes, I did. He said, yeah, that beautiful, shiny degree. Yeah. But he says, and here you are working for me. I said, yes, I am. He said, exactly. He said, now I'm not saying it's a negative thing. He said, I'm glad you got that. He said, going forward, that's going to be something that's going to benefit you. He said, but there are more ways to educate yourself than just, you know, going to school. He said, don't let it stop there.
So be smart, get educated,
and continue to speak out.
Yeah, speak out.
If we don't, but speak out in a manner that doesn't give them the ability to come back to you and be negative. Like, don't find a way to do it so that they're puzzled, they're confused, because they have one move in their playbook, and when you all of a sudden You ever watch, I forget, it was a Jerry Glanville, it was someone in the NFL one time. They had the playbook out, and they were playing against Brett Favre, I believe it was, and he was destroying their defense. He took the paper, his defensive playbook, crumbled it up and slammed on the ground and kicked it behind him. Because he basically said, well, none of that's going to work. And it's one of the classic moves, and I really wish I could remember who it was, but it was one of the classic moves where he just said, you know what? Well, this is no good. Let me get rid of this book. We're done. Figure out another way because I'm done. And there's just no different than what we do in life. People expect you to react a certain way. There have been plenty of times because of my size, my training. People automatically assume that, and I've had people say this, oh, my God, I pictured you to be something different. I said, what did you expect? They said, well, with, you know, your years as a police officer in the military, special operations, your size, you know, you're a big guy. I said, yes, but that's who I am professionally. When I come home, I'm Ty. I said, I'm the guy I have to be when I'm in uniform, when I'm on the front line, when I'm leading. You have to be able to switch and understand that switch and control that switch.
Ooh, yes. Now, wow, damn, I know we've been on this for a minute, but I get to dive into this, man. Like, that switch, man. Can you talk some more about that? Like, what that even means? Because that's a huge piece in leadership, I feel like. And being able to, I want to hear what that means for you.
Well, the switch is, number one, for two parts. Number one, I learned this from my father. He never came home, so I didn't know Officer Holmes. Or Detective Holmes. I knew Dad. So my father told me this very early in my career. You have to be able to separate who you are at work and at home. That's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So I learned to do that because, number one, I cannot use the same leadership style at home and then the same one at work. We're talking about two different types of people. You know, my children and my wife are different than obviously my soldiers or the officers. So the switch, I would always tell people, it's part physical and part mental. For instance, I didn't wear my uniform home. I never wore my uniform home. I've changed it all the time before I got home. Because when I came in the house, I'm Ty or Dad, or husband, you know.
Right.
But then when I go back to work, you know, I was, you know, master sergeant or sergeant. I remember one time my wife came to work when we were at one of our places, and as she was leaving, one of the soldiers walked over jokingly and said, could you come in tomorrow? And she said, why? They said, because when you're here, he smiles. She goes, what, are you kidding me? My husband's a cut up. She goes, don't get me wrong. He's not mean. She's like, he's just serious. And what I used to, and my wife told me when I got home tonight. So I went back to work and I said, let me get you guys to understand something. My job is to teach you to be efficient at your job. And if you are, you come home. We come home. Not in a box, but we walk home. Okay? When I'm at home, my job is to mentor my sons to be fine men, educated. My job is to love my wife. My job is to protect my family, to provide. It's a different thing. So I am two different people. Okay? And you'll learn that over time. You'll be to do that switch. It doesn't happen right away. I learned over years of doing it to basically digress myself from work. As soon as I left work, leave work at work. Come home and focus on family. And then when I go to work, there's nothing in the world that was harder than being in a desert if I thought about home. I didn't do it. When we were on combat missions, my head was 100% wrapped around one thing, the men and women to my left and right. So I had to switch. And I would teach them, like, you need to be able to do this if you want to make it home, because if you're home mentally in this place, you're gonna go home in a box. So you have to learn to mentally be able to tell yourself to turn off certain emotions. Case in point, and this may be a little graphic, but I told people, how many people in their profession can watch one of their fellow soldiers or friends get shot in the head right next to them and continue to do their job without hesitation? That's what we're conditioned to do. That's what I was conditioned to do. That's what I conditioned my men and women to do. Because if we stop firing and engaging the enemy, then that would allow them to close their position on us and place us in greater harm of losing whatever foothold we had. So if your battle buddy, we call them, was laying on the ground wounded, the medic can't get to them until you suppress whatever is coming towards you. So you have to continue to fire. If you stop, that's another gun that's down. That means they're going to get closer. So you had to condition yourself to, I know common theory is that your buddy just got shot, turn, drop your gun and start helping him. No, what we trained you to do is to continue to do your job. The medic would get there once you could secure that area. So the switch happens many different levels, from switch to coming at home, switch to being in leadership, and even in life. There are times when, even as a leader, you can defer. The last example I'll give to you that is we were efficient at clearing buildings in Iraq. We were known, we had gotten a reputation of being very good at it. We practiced, we had great team members. And we had a young soldier who was 18 who came to us one day and said, "Hey, I have a great way that I think is going to work and make us more efficient. Can we implement it?" And so he came to us and said, "Hey, I have a different way of doing things. I would really like to try it." And I said, "Where'd you come up with this?" He said, "On PlayStation and Call of Duty." Now, a couple of the guys laughed. I said, "You pulled him aside," said, "Why are you laughing at him? You have to give this kid an opportunity." And yes, he came with an up on PlayStation, but let's try. Well, we went out and we called what we call as a rock drill. We rehearsed it. He drew it up in the sand, set it up, and we practiced it. And actually, it was efficient. It made us much more efficient. It made us, it was safer. You know, we were going to reduce possible loss of life. So we rehearsed it. Once we got it to a point where we thought we were efficient enough at it, we brought our commanders in. Commander came and said, "Okay, great. Okay, who came up with this?" And we said, "The 18-year-old kid." We called him the kid because he was the youngest. And that kid ended up being sent back to D.C. and training the people at the Pentagon, showing them how he came up with this off of a video game. Now, as a leader, if we had cast him off and not listened to him, what they're currently using right now to clear buildings might not have ever come had someone not paid attention to this kid.
So that's like, that's that again is that servant leadership piece.
About, absolutely.
Yeah, that's.
And now that kid.
You gotta be open.
But now that child, that kid right now, that same kid that I led in 2007, he's in Afghanistan leading, and he's leading a battalion right now. And for him to go from where he went to there, his confidence was gained by us giving him an opportunity. And again, he was given an opportunity, and we weren't going to crucify him if it didn't work. We're going to try it.
Right. Man, see, this is what I appreciate about what you do, and I appreciate you taking this time to go through this time, because, you know, listen, this means I appreciate you shedding your wisdom and insight on leadership, especially when we originally dove into the servant leadership piece, and I feel like there was so many more gems on leadership as a whole. So I thank you for that. So before we wrap up, man, is there like, I give my guests 90 seconds. Like, some take less, some take more, but is there over the next 90 seconds, man, is there something that you'd want what's something that you'd really want the people to take away from the content that we had today? Or you can use the time as like something that you'd want to say that you didn't get to in the session. However you want to use it, 90 seconds is yours.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate everything you're doing. I love the message that you are bringing forth. I definitely support it. And I think that more people need to get involved. If I want to say anything to people, say, we get involved, we help. Leadership comes from different backgrounds. There's many different types of leadership. But you can't be that leader if you don't try. If you don't actually get yourself involved, if you sit in the sidelines, you cannot sit there and criticize later. Okay, if you don't take the opportunity to try to change minds, reach one, teach one, then you can't complain when it doesn't go well. So all I want to tell people, and I want people to know, is that there is nothing worse than not trying. Failure is what we're all going to do. You know, you're all going to fail. No one is immune from failing. Okay. You're successful so long as you get up and try after you failed in everything you do. I have a son that's on the job right now. He's a police officer in Arizona. And that's something I tell him all the time. He's had a tough year with some shootings and everything involved, officer involved shootings, and he's gotten a little discouraged. And I always tell him, like, you know, number one, always remember you're a part of something bigger than yourself. Two, that again, the only failure in life is, you know, that from that person that refuses to take that chance. If you don't take a chance, if you don't follow the dreams, you don't chase them, chase whatever dream it is that you have, then you are responsible for where you end up in life. Now, people are going to try to hold you down. People are going to try to stop you, but that's up to you. I tell people, I said, when I got to where I was going to be, number one, when I retired, I looked back on my career and said, I did it my way. I went across against the grain. I fought. When people said I shouldn't, I'm going to. I'm not going to allow you to stop me. And that's what people need to understand. Set your mind to something. Don't ever let anyone discourage you if you know it's what you want to do. Okay? That's it. So I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate your message. I appreciate you. I've always appreciated you. I've always appreciated your family. We go back literally to pro kids and stuff all the way up to our knees. I mean, that's how we go back. So, you know, I appreciate you. I really do.
Man, I feel the same about you.
And I'm honored and I'm blessed. And I'm so grateful that you allowed me to be there. And I'm, if you ever had a conversation, any conversation, I would be honored to just even be in the conversation because, again, you are truly a positive, inspirational brother that people need to follow, listen to, inspire, and take your words to heart and say, wow, powerful.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that time, man. I love your family, man. I love you, man. And how do people, if people want to connect with you, contact you, what's the best way for them to reach you, man?
I'm pretty simple. I'm just a Facebook guy, so just hit me up, Ty Holmes. I'm on Facebook, so please, by all means, if you ever want to talk. I always tell people, I said, you know, my wife always tells me to change my phone number, and I said, I can't. She says, why? I said,
nah, because
in 25 years, this is the only number I've ever had, and every single soldier or police officer that I've ever served with has this number. And if they ever need me, they know I'm a phone call. When I tell people, I'm a phone call away. I've never changed my number. I'm never going to because I'm here. And again, I speak. I go to engagements. I speak at different places, try to mentor kids and some of the elementary school kids and high school kids because I was blessed with knowledge given to me by people. They told me to make sure you pay it forward. That's something else we need to do. Don't hog it. It doesn't do you any good. Share it. Share everything you take in.
Brother, man, I appreciate you. Thank you, Ty, man. Appreciate you guys. Check my man out. Follow this dude, man. Drop his science, and he's a servant. He's a leader in the truest form, man. Appreciate you. And thank you, everybody, for watching.
Thank you, bro.
Until next episode.
Take care. Peace out, bro.
What'd I tell you? I told you this dude was bringing some gems. Yeah, this is... I tell you right now, I've listened to this podcast several times already before I even published it. And I'm going to invite others to listen to it a couple times too, because there's something that unearths itself each time I've listened to it. And I think it may be the same for you. Give it a go. Try it. And thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to Men Talk About every week. We're here every week giving men, those harnessing and honing in on their masculine energy, tools, nuggets, gems for men's development, men's inner work, men's education. This is about us bringing our highest selves to whatever space we dive into. And it starts by bringing our highest selves to ourselves. Stepping into our king, stepping into our sovereign. Love it all. Find yourself, man. Find yourself. And I'm excited that this may be a tool to help you get there. Thank you for tuning in. We are on anchor.fm. Check us out on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Men Talk About Podcasts every week. Thank you all. I'm so grateful to be able to do what I do and share this information with you all. be well, and I'll see you all next episode.